Hey there, word wizards, and welcome to this episode of Am I Right Podcast. I am your host, Sheridan Sharp, and I'm excited to bring you insights from authors, editors, and agents from around the globe. Because while we write alone, writing doesn't have to be solitary. Am I right? Word wizards, welcome back to an excellent episode of Am I Right? And I am to talk to someone who is on the same side of the U.S. as me today. Not the West. This is Rosalind Eves, and she has got a wonderful portfolio, and love that you've written in different genres, even though it's all in young adult. That's something that really fascinates me, and I'm excited to talk about that. Thank you for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. I'm excited to talk about kind of your upcoming projects, too. I'm going to let you introduce yourself to the audience. Go ahead and tell them about yourself, and then we'll just dive into our questions.
Yeah, like you mentioned, my name's Rosalind Eves. I live in Southern Utah, and I am an English professor at Southern Utah University. I also write young adult novels, mostly historical, some historical fantasy. Three kids, so between teaching and writing and parenting, I stay pretty busy.
I imagine, yes. Life is busy, and when you throw in trying to write the manuscript, it gets crazier, absolutely. And I love that you are helping teach through Andrew Avenue, because I think not all of us have gotten the college education that comes with publishing and writing. Some people are self-taught, and kudos to them, because it's a lot to learn. But I do think there's a lot of it that you learn on your own anyway, through trial and error, right? And so I love that you bridge that gap and teach from both sides. So did you always want to be a YA author? Was that always your goal? And did you always want to teach as well? Like, where did that come for you?
Yeah, those are great questions. I decided I wanted to be a writer when I was about 11 or 12. I had a great elementary school teacher who I was writing terrible poems, but she said, "These are great. You should share them with someone that you care about." And for some reason, that was the first point that it like clicked that, oh, writers are actual people. I don't know where I thought books came from before then, like they just magically existed. But from the moment that I knew that like real people wrote books, I wanted to write books. The professor thing, my parents are both professors. And so I think after college, and I really enjoy school. I'm nerdy that way. I like academic stuff. And so I mean, I've always liked both of them. So I wrote a lot as a teenager. Then I went to college and grad school and kind of stopped writing for a while. So it wasn't until after grad school that I started writing again. So I was always doing both at the same time. I really like having a day job. I like having something that's reliable. It does make it hard to get all the writing in sometimes, I will admit. But for me, at least, it's worked so far.
Yeah. Yeah. There's pros and cons to both, right? When you make it your full-time job, there's a lot of uncertainty that comes from it. And I commend those who do that, but sometimes it is good to have something else, and also just fun to try something else during the day and then have your creativity be unleashed when you work on your manuscript. So
I really enjoy teaching too, so it makes it worth it.
Yeah. Well, teaching is very fulfilling. And when you mentioned being a nerd, I laughed because I think a lot of us are, those who are obsessed with words and reading and writing. I mean, that's just the category we get put into.
I think I think you have to be to some degree.
I would agree. You have to be a nerd. I don't know. I can't imagine not liking this and trying to do it for an occupation, because there are way more options that are a lot more viable.
Oh yeah. That are a lot easier if you don't have, if you don't have the passion for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So with your experience, I know you have a passion for teaching others about writing and about getting it ready for publication. You have classes that you've taught about that I'm sure have been hot seated. And I just, of your experience, you have a unique experience of being on both sides, right? You're teaching about it, but you've also experienced it yourself. And is there something that you wish you would have known beforehand, maybe that someone would have taught you about publishing that surprised you?
Oh, lots of things. I think one of the things was like, not to be so much in a rush, I think, and I didn't publish super young, but I see a lot of pressure that people put on themselves to publish as soon as possible. And I think, well, publishing is a good goal and you should absolutely be working towards it. I am so grateful that like the fantasy novel that I sent to Tor when I was 19. I'm super glad that never got picked up because it was a terrible book. Like, I think sometimes it takes time to grow your craft and to grow your life experiences. And that's okay, because all of that's going to feed in to what you write. The book that was my debut, I couldn't have written that book in my 20s. So I think that would have been one thing to tell my previous self. It's okay if it takes a little bit of time. It feels like there's a rush, but I don't think there always is. I think you can take your time. And the other one is, I think, just the reminder, keep in mind why you write and why you love writing, because publishing has so many ups and downs. I guess I naively thought once I had an agent that like my career was guaranteed from that point. And that's not always the case. For example, right now, I don't have anything under contract. I have a couple of things I'm working on that I hope will get picked up, but there's just not a guarantee. And so you have to really write because you love it. And that's what I try and remind my students too.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I actually had on my list of questions I wanted to ask you was, do you feel the pressure to perform quickly and publish immediately? And that's something that, thinking about college and teaching your students and what it was like for me being a student of English and publishing, I felt that. And it wasn't necessarily a competition with your peers, but the pressure to bring it out there so that you can start building on it was huge. It felt huge anyway.
Really intense. I have my students read Liz Gilbert's Big Magic as part of the class.
I love that one.
And I think it's great because she does talk about taking almost a decade before she really got her career started. And the importance of having a side gig, at least until your writing takes off. Don't make your art support you when you're getting started, because I think that's where part of that pressure comes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And it's a very big picture, a large cookie to bite when you're like, okay, I've got to be the next J.K. Rowling by this time. And I think as soon as you set that limit,
yeah,
gonna all go downhill anyway. So don't.
Well, and then you get disappointed. I don't think there's, from what I hear, you set a milestone. I want to be published, and then publishing isn't enough. You want to hit bestseller lists, and then that's not enough. Mm-hmm. But if you're doing it because you really love telling the stories, then there's always going to be joy in it, no matter what else happens.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you for that advice. That's great. And good to remember that sometimes being a writer, I've gotten this vibe from the people that I've interviewed, it's almost like a fine wine. The longer you go trying it and learning it, the better it tastes to your readers. And so there's always something to learn, right? And the more that you learn about writing, the more that you know you have to learn, if anyone can relate to that. From definitely how I feel when I'm researching and trying to gain more resources and information. So just keeping that in mind, keeping in mind why you love what you do is such an important part of writing, and sometimes something that I forget and need to remind myself about. Do you take breaks ever? Do you have had deadlines? You've had school stuff, you've had your family. Do you ever just need like a break from writing, or is that something that you just always feel like you need to do?
I always feel like I need to do it because I'm what I like to call a recovering perfectionist. So I always feel the pressure of doing it, but I do take breaks. I think it's okay. I honestly think that some of the advice about you have to write every day to be a writer, most of that is coming from often wealthy men who have a spouse to take care of other things. I think what we find is people who have a lot of responsibilities, you have to juggle it. Sometimes if one of my kids is in crisis, that's my priority and I might not write for a week. Or when my students turn in papers, I might not write for a week. I try to write as consistently as I can, but I also try not to beat myself up when life happens.
Part of the recovering perfectionism. You're telling me that if I didn't write this week, then all is not ending. All is not over.
Oh, no. It can take a little bit of time sometimes to regain your momentum. Yes, but I also really think your subconscious mind is constantly working on story problems, even when you're not like actually writing stuff out. And for me, at least, it takes time. I don't think I can speed up the process necessarily. I have to let ideas marinate for a while before I can write them. So
yeah, true. And taking that time has been really beneficial for me. I know from my experience, I'm not preaching as someone who's wildly successful, but just having that perspective coming back with a fresh mind is really important. If you're going for a walk or taking a day break or whatever you need to do to be able to see it, it's not the end all be all if you can't pump it all out in one sitting.
Yeah. And I would also add, I think we're in a culture that really, we see this with the algorithms, like this productivity culture that tries to tell you that if you're not constantly producing, you're not valuable. And I think that can be really damaging to artists and causes. I see lots of burnout in creators, in my students. So I think take the time that you need so that you can stay in it for the long haul.
I love that. That's great. That's our plaque quote of the episode. If I could put it on a plaque and remind myself, that's what I put on the wall. Okay, so here's a little. Are you a pantser or a plotter, or are you both?
I'm somewhere in the middle. I do plot out my stories in advance, but it's usually a loose plot. I like the 7-point plot structure that Dan Wells talks about. So I will usually use that to at least know my major plot points. But I do pants a little bit in between plot points. Sometimes if I have a good idea, I will write it out, but sometimes it just comes as I'm writing. And sometimes I plot it out and get a better idea halfway through. And so then I ditch the outline and go with that.
Take a detour. Yeah. So you already mentioned a resource, but are there specific resources that you use that you would recommend for those who are like starting out to polish your manuscript before you start submitting it to publication with that plotting and the pantsing and pulling that together?
Yeah, it depends on the kind of writer that you are, but I really like Cheryl Klein has a book called Magic Words. So she is an editor. I think she's at Lee and Low Books now, but for a long time, she worked with Scholastic. She worked with Arthur Levine when he acquired the Harry Potter books. And she has some fantastic tips on revising your novel, like how to find the heart of your novel, how to go through and polish it. I really have liked that one. And now, of course, I'm like, I have a whole shelf of these books. And now that you've asked that.
Well, I did put you on the spot, so it's okay.
Yeah.
It's great. That's a great resource to start with. I've read that one, which I've heard about a lot of things from the show, but I definitely want to look into that and take a look at it and see what truths you can find from it. Have you found any universal truths from your experience about publishing and querying and all that? Has there been any kind of pattern of success? Because the more I ask, the more it's not really.
No. Expect the unexpected kind of seems to be the thing. My debut year, a fellow debut said something that I think about a lot. And she said, your debut year is hard because you're constantly being disappointed by things that you didn't know were an expectation until somebody else gets it and you don't. And it, because you don't know what to expect. And so then you see people getting these massive book tours or them getting picked up by Fairy Loot or whatever. And if you're not getting that, it's just this weird thing, these constant things that you're just getting disappointed by that you didn't even know you could be disappointed by. So I think this is part of the reason you've really got to love the writing. Also having a critique group or even just a good friend group, you need to have your cheerleaders too.
Did you find your critique group from people that you know, friends and family, or was it from fellow coworkers or people online? Like, where do you get your best cheerleaders from?
For beta readers, sometimes I'll exchange with people that I met online. My actual critique group, there's a group of local authors that when I started writing, I knew I wanted a critique group because that's how I wrote my dissertation, was like trading pages with other writers. Yeah. And so we hadn't been in here very long. And I asked a friend who was an English teacher at a high school. I asked someone I didn't even know very well, but I knew that she had gone to the Writing and Illustrating for Young Readers conference. Right. And they're still, we still trade pages and share each other's writings. And it's been more than 10 years. So yeah, my in-person critique group was local, but.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool that you pulled it from different areas too, right? That you have those different perspectives. Because I think it is important to have just regular readers as a part of at least some part of your process of the people who look at your stuff, then also people who know the field and know what's going on. It's important to have a mix because I think one of the common misconceptions is that once you get an agent, the agent's going to be like very accessible and give you all the thoughts on it. And that is true. You know, you need other people. You need other people to help you make it good.
And my agent will give feedback if I specifically ask for it. But otherwise, he's more hands off. And I knew that going into this.
It works for you too. That's what works for you. You found what you need to make the process work. And he has things going on that I'm sure he's super busy and
you know,
help move that success forward. And so everybody's busy, but I think don't expect your agent to be the one who's going to just do all the work for you. And that's something that I really try to, I don't know, reiterate during some of our episodes, is that you're, it's just step one, getting that agent, getting that publisher. Your journey is not over, right? It continues. And yeah, it's a little overwhelming for those of us who are starting out. I feel like I try to learn more about it, and then we have these great guests on, and it feels like, how am I even going to get to the point where people are going to see this, and how is this worth it? And so reminding yourself why you like it. And then, so I wanted to ask, do you teach about queries when you, in this class, do you teach query letters and publishing as well?
Yeah. So I have been lucky that I've been able to teach this class a couple of times, and I'm hoping to teach it again in the fall. But it's basically like an introduction to publishing. And so we talk about careers in publishing. We talk about the role of agents and editors and different kinds of editors, like line edits and copy edits and developmental edits. And I'm hoping this fall, I met a book scout a couple weeks ago, and I'm hoping to have her come do a Zoom lecture to my class and talk about what book scouts do. But we also talk about what the publication process looks like. They have to write a query letter either for a novel or a short story that they're working on. They have to submit something as part of the class. I haven't put together a website. My goal really is to try and think about, I put the class together by going into some Facebook groups that I'm part of with a lot of published authors and just saying, what did you wish you knew before you got started? And put the class together for that. And I really am excited about the class, because I think it does a lot to prepare. I hope it does a lot to prepare students for what they're going to find in publishing, and especially if they're thinking of going into publishing.
Yeah. And this is not to bash on anyone who taught me in my college career, but I wish I would have had a class that focused so much on that. And queries, I feel, are kind of a hot topic always. I'm always asking questions about queries, because we're all curious and we're all in the trenches and trying to make that work. And have you found, is there anything you tell your students about query letters that you wish that they knew more often?
Querying is changing all of the time. It's different now even than when I queried my agent. You're getting a lot more no response means no, and a lot fewer personalized rejections, which is incredibly hard. I think what I encourage them to do is read blogs about queries. I like Janet Reed's Query Shark. Just look at different queries. Get your query vetted by a lot of different people so you can find out if there's problem areas or things that people are confused by. Getting multiple eyes on it, I think, is really helpful. But yeah, I think otherwise, just stick it out. I know people who have a reward system in place. I know after every 15 or 20 queries, I get a treat for myself, because the only thing you can control with the querying process is how many queries you're sending out. You can't control what's happening on the other end. So
right.
I think just be prepared for the rejection cycle, and also remember that the traditional publishing is not the only way to go. If you're finding you're not getting a lot of success with gatekeepers, but you're getting a good response from readers, maybe that's not the best route for your book.
And you have friends, we talked about this off air, you have friends who have been really successful in their self-publishing journey, but then also those who traditional was the route and it worked well for them. So it's
and
becoming-
some who do both.
Yeah, and it's become more fluid. Yeah, and we have hybrids too, which weren't really a thing in my brain when I even started the show. And now we're in season two, they're like, oh yeah, mine's a hybrid. And you're like, what?
Yeah, I think it's pretty common.
It is very fluid. And so that was a hard question to ask you, I'm sure, is what do you wish they would know about query letters? Because query letters are changing. But I do think it's important to keep just more updated with what's going on, which is a really great suggestion to your students, right? Is just getting out there into even the internet and being like, okay, what are people looking for right now? And what worked for you? And it's good to build those communities. Yeah. So I'm going to put Janet Reed's Query Shark. I'll put that in the show notes on resources for those who are listening, but definitely take a look at that. I'll be taking a look at it. Okay. Last thing I wanted to ask you before we run out of time. You are a lyrical writer and you're also big on writing emotion. You talk about the idea of the objective correlative, and I would love I know you probably explained this to death just from your occupation, but I would love to talk about that a little bit if you want to explain that to us.
I think I have a blog post somewhere. I'll try and send it to you. It was on the blog is no longer active, but I think it's still out there. The blog is Thinking Through Your Fingers, and I have a post on that on the objective correlative if people want to refer back to it and look at actual examples. But the objective correlative, it's this idea that kind of goes beyond. We hear show, don't tell sometimes. And this goes a little bit beyond that, saying we're trying to find something in our story that evokes an emotion in the readers. And so the objective correlative, it starts with this idea that there's an object that has some sort of symbolic importance to the reader. And when something happens to that object, the listeners feel a response to that. So one example that I use when I teach about this is in Shannon Hale's Goose Girl. When the princess first leaves home, her mother gives her this handkerchief and she puts a drop of her blood on it. And she says, this handkerchief connects you to me and it will protect you. And so when something goes terribly wrong, she loses that handkerchief. And there's this really visceral reaction. Ideally, if you do it well, the reader feels that loss because we know how important that object is to the story. So that's one example of that. I think the objective correlative also works in the descriptive language we use. So instead of telling someone this character felt sad, or even just describing the physical characters of sadness, because reading like the tears stream down someone's eyes doesn't make the reader feel sad. Mm-mm. What does make us feel sad is like the setup to that moment, so we can appreciate how it feels for the character, and even the kind of words that we use, right? That sometimes there are descriptive words that are cold or sharp, and there are descriptive words that can be warm and soothing, and that using those words in a scene helps enhance the emotion that we want the reader. That's really what it's about, is different tools that writers can use to help the reader feel rather than just telling the reader what's going on.
Mm. Love that. That was a great explanation. Sounds like you've maybe explained this a few times.
I think it's probably the most popular class that I've taught at Storymakers. The last time I taught it, I think there was standing room only in the back, and they had put me in one of the big rooms. So,
wow.
But I think it has more to do with the concept than anything else.
Yeah. I love that you brought up Shannon Hale's Goose Girl, because I have it on my shelf over here.
Oh, it's such a great book.
Great book. And I think you're like the first person that I have talked to that's also read it and would suggest it. But if you're looking for an example of that, she does that several times throughout the story with different authors. And I love it. So it's a great example, I would say. If you want to check it out, definitely do. And then she mentioned Storymakers. Those who are listening, there's a conference in Utah. It happens every year, I believe. And this pulls some agents and editors and authors from around the world who want to come and talk about a specific subject, and you can come to the panel in person, but those are all filled right now. So if you're interested, though, you can still watch it virtually, and it will be in May, and you can learn a lot from the conference and the classes. And so definitely check it out. We have Rosalind coming to it. We have other authors who are coming on the show who will be there as well. And so it'll be a really uplifting and fulfilling experience for everybody who just needs a little boost and some more knowledge about their manuscript and how they can make it better. But I am going to be looking into the objective correlative now more in my manuscript and be like, okay, what objects are really important in helping in this story? And it's funny that you mentioned that, because yesterday I was helping my teenage brother, little brother, with his English class, because he's a math-minded individual. So I am found helping him a lot. And he was reading just a classic book, and he's, I don't understand. It's asking me to list symbols. And I said, are there objects that people interact with in the story ever? And he's, oh yeah. And so he listed some of them off. And I said, do you think that the reason that the objects are there is because they have relation to the story? And he was like, his mind exploded. And he was like, when people write books, they think about this beforehand, that they connect objects, like all the objects have a purpose in the book. And he's like, the writing was hard before. He was having like a revelatory moment. And I was just laughing, because it is a lot of work, but it's so fun to make those connections. And I think sometimes literary analysis gets a bad rep, but I think that's one of the best parts of it, honestly.
Yeah. And some things I don't think, I think some things are happy accidents, speaking as someone who's like both a writer and an English teacher. But yeah, I think writers absolutely plan them. One of my favorites in my books, in Beyond the Map Stars, there's a character who's torn between her faith and her pursuit of science and trying to figure out how those two reconcile with each other. And because she's interested in astronomy, I kind of use day and night and weather patterns to reflect some of her state of mind. So for her science, when the sun is clear, right, when the day is clear, that's when she's getting clarity about her pursuit of science. And when the night is clear, that's when she's clearest, like, about her religious goals. And it was really fun to play with. And I don't know that readers even noticed it, but to me, it made the story more powerful.
Some did. I know some readers noticed it because I love to just sit and analyze it sometimes. But and really fun. The weather, I think that's a really fun one to use. I think
we do it a lot.
It affects us. Yeah, weather affects us and we notice that. So that's a really fun comparison. I'll be looking that up as well. I wish I could ask you a ton more questions. I will say to those who have learned from Rosalind and hopefully been compelled to learn more from her, look at the conference, but also watch what she's doing. You have several projects that are pending, but you also have publication coming up. If you want to talk about that, where can we go to support you and be excited about your latest projects?
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I have a YA Regency romance coming out next week called An Unexpected Proposition, and it's a companion novel to An Improbable Season. So if you've read that, you'll see some similar characters, but they are standalones, like they don't have to be read together. There is a little bit of a spoiler for An Improbable Season and An Unlikely Proposition, but I don't think it would spoil the enjoyment of the book. But yeah, you can find those pretty much anywhere books are sold, especially online retailers. But yeah, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And you have your most prominent on your Instagram, right? Your Instagram account. So follow her on that one as well to see upcoming projects. And then, of course, we have your website, which I'll include in the resources as well. So lots of fun things coming up. And I'm so excited for you next week. Congratulations. When this airs, it'll probably already have been.
That's okay.
To the public, but go and pick it out of the shelves and see it. It's really cute, lovely color palette. The cover
is
awesome. Love the cover. I know you don't get a lot of say in the cover, but they did a great job. And it'll be fun. It'll be a really fun read. So thank you for coming on, and I'm sure we'll have more to talk about your journey and your experience in the future, but we wish you the best of luck, and we are happy to have you on the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Sheridan.
Yeah, absolutely. And to you word wizards out there, I hope this inspired you to keep writing on. Can you see ways to improve your writing process already? Thanks for joining us on this excellent episode of Am I Right? For more information about the podcast, guests, or upcoming episodes, follow the show on Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Right on, word wizards!